Okay, we'll move to our fourth argument of the morning. It's in appeal number 223082, Deshaun Jewell versus the warden, Gary Boughton. Ms. Montgomery, good morning.
Good morning, Your Honors. Carrie Montgomery on behalf of petitioner appellant Deshaun Harold Jewell. May it please the court. This court should reverse the district court's denial of Mr. Jewell's habeas petition because the trial judge's ex parte communication with the deliberating jury about key factual evidence violated Mr. Jewell's constitutional rights. That error was not harmless, and the Wisconsin Court of Appeals harmlessness finding was an unreasonable application of clearly established federal law. First, the Wisconsin Court of Appeals applied a sufficiency of the evidence test opposed to the Chapman's harmless error test. In particular, the state court in paragraph 24 stated, "The trial court's error does not undermine our confidence in the outcome of the trial because there is sufficient evidence to support the verdict."
Ms. Montgomery, can I ask you a question on that issue? Does it matter that the judge answered the question on what was an undisputed fact at trial? And it was a very narrow question and a very narrow answer, no, without any explanation. But that the answer to that question was undisputed at trial. Does that make a difference?
It does matter, Your Honor. First, I would disagree that it was not undisputed. The trial counsel, defense counsel, made several challenges to the photo array, the administration of the photo array.
Right, but there was no dispute that the six-pack was different than the photo array.
There was no dispute if you credit the officer's testimony regarding the shuffling of the photos.
But was that at issue during trial, during cross-examination? Did anybody challenge the officer's testimony regarding shuffling the photos? You know, in other words, what I'm getting at here, I'll just get right to it. If the judge had called the parties into court, he should have done that, okay? Calls the parties into court and said, here's the question, the answer is no, and I'm going to tell the jury the answer is no. Now, I could send the officer's testimony back. Everybody would agree with that. I could do that. But I don't want to do that because I don't want to invite the jury to request all of the transcripts in the case. I'm just going to answer the question, no. Objection, Your Honor, you should state that the jury has to determine the facts. I'm not going to do that. Would we be here today?
So we probably would, because the judge's answer was based on factual evidence, and it's improper for a trial judge to invade the province of the jury. In this particular case, the answer no was substantive because it required the judge to credit the officer's testimony in this case that the photos were actually shuffled before going into the photo array. So yes, we would likely be here today. The Wisconsin Court of Appeals didn't even consider that fact. They looked at whether or not the answer was actually factually correct instead of looking at whether or not the trial judge should have even answered the question. And that's important because in Supreme Court cases, including Rogers, they look at the roles of the judge and the jury. In Rogers, the issue was that the judge gave the jury sentencing function. In Jewell's case, we have an opposite situation where you have the judge that's invading the province of the jury. That's the first issue with the Wisconsin Court of Appeals decision. The second issue is that instead of, you know, they didn't consider that, but the second issue is that they didn't, they applied the wrong test. Instead of looking at the judge's ex parte communication with the jury, they looked at instead, they looked at the sufficiency of the evidence, whether or not there was enough evidence to convict, and it relied solely on the prosecution's evidence alone, and that's not the standard. The Supreme Court has said that, and this court, particularly in Jensen v. Clements, has concluded that whenever you have the same a court that applies the sufficiency of the evidence test opposed to the Chapman's harmless error test, then that's enough under AEDPA to grant relief.
You agree, though, that the harmless error standard does permit consideration of the strength of the state's case.
Yes, I do agree with that, but it's not looking at the prosecution evidence only. It is looking at the totality of the record and looking at all And considering the defense's arguments as well, anything that the defense raised on cross-examination stated in closing, which the Wisconsin Court of Appeals didn't even consider here.
Yeah, see, that part I wonder about. The way I interpret your argument is not so much that they didn't consider it, they made an error in considering it, because early on in their opinion, they do say that the defendant Jewell argued that his right to have the case decided free from extra record infiltration, you know, was violated. And what Mr. Jewell meant by that, I took it, is that the judge was basically directing a factual finding. And as you say, one that inherent within it was a credibility determination. But then they never kind of came back to that in their analysis.
Well, the way I read the Wisconsin Court of Appeals opinion is that they were looking first at whether or not there was a constitutional error by the judge. And that's not in dispute here. There was a constitutional error. Mr. Jewell's right to counsel, his right to presence. Wisconsin Court of Appeals also considered whether or not his right to a jury trial was also violated. So that's not in dispute here. But then when the court went on to do the harmlessness analysis under Chapman, the court did not hold the state to its burden to prove beyond a reasonable doubt that the trial judge's ex parte communication did not contribute to the verdict at hand.
Yeah, that's the tougher point for your client on the evidence here. I mean, the evidence is pretty strong. I mean, his DNA is at the crime scene, and then the victim had at least two opportunities to see him face to face during the robbery.
So the evidence was not as overwhelming as the state would like it to be. Yes, there was DNA evidence, but the jury also heard evidence that there were also two other contributors on the hat for the DNA evidence. In terms of the identification,
he was the primary, or I don't remember.
He was the major contributor. But the jury had this evidence and still had a question in the jury room about whether or not the photo array, the numbering on the photo array and the six pack were the same. So one or more jurors did not feel comfortable convicting Mr. Jewell just based on the DNA evidence or the in-court or out-of-court identification. And that's especially important here too, where the defense counsel raised many challenges to the in-court and out-of-court identification. So the defense counsel argued on closing arguments and raised during cross that the officers in this particular case didn't follow everything on the photo array. They made improper statements to CF during the administration of the photo array, which could have encouraged her to choose the wrong, to make a false identification. They also didn't follow police procedures or DOJ best practices when administering photo arrays. So the jury had all of this evidence and still had the question about the numbering, likely because they questioned the officer's credibility. And that's why it was improper for the judge to step in and resolve those concerns for the jury. And that's just like one factor. On collateral review, this court looks at under Brent, the harmlessness, whether or not the ex parte communication had a substantial and injurious effect on the jury's verdict. And the overall strength of the prosecution case is one case, but I encourage this court to look at the other factors that Rogers laid out. And those factors are the nature of the information conveyed. Again, it mattered that the judge was stepping in and making these findings, these factual findings for the jury. And then the second factor is the speed of the verdict after the response. So the jury deliberated for close to 2 hours, and then after the judge gave his response, shortly after, we know that the jury came back with a verdict, and all of those points are important when we consider whether or not there was a effect on a jury's verdict. And I'd like to save the rest of my time for rebuttal.
Okay, very well. Mr. O'Brien, good morning.
May it please the court. The jury asked the court a question during deliberations. The judge quite obviously had to answer that question. He couldn't ignore it. Had the judge answered the question, "Jurors, please rely on your collective memory," we wouldn't be here. We know that because the defense attorney, when the judge made the record after he answered the question ex parte, said, Judge, I would have preferred that you had told the jury to rely on its collective memory. However, I do understand from my experience, the six pack and the eight folders photo array are never, the numbering system is never the same.
Mr. O'Brien, can you help me before you go for on a background point? I was really confused when I looked at the record. Why was the so-called six-pack array put into evidence, but not the folders? Because the six-pack array doesn't seem to have anything to do with it, because the six-pack is not what they showed the crime victim. They showed the crime victim these series of folders that had pictures in six of them, and two were blank. So I can understand, because I was trying to figure out, why would the jury ask a question like this? Because what was introduced into evidence seems irrelevant. The photo array doesn't have anything to do with it.
And that I don't have a good answer to that. I know that the officer was questioned at length about the photo array and what it consisted of, but as far as those actual folders,
you understand what I'm asking?
Yeah.
Showing that if they had showed the victim the photo array, I totally understand why the trial evidence would have included the photo array.
Yeah.
But that's not what happened.
Yeah.
And so I just trying to figure out the way the state presented the case seems mysterious to me.
They certainly they discussed the show up, the photographic show up with the victim at her house at great length and described the procedure. But you're right, the photos were not introduced in evidence. And as far as the jury's interest in the six pack, I think the district judge made a good comment that the question's kind of a head scratcher. Because this really wasn't
well. I could see somebody in the jury room. If you held up the six pack in the jury room, some juror could say, "Yeah, that's a six pack." But remember, there's that testimony. They didn't use that.
Yeah.
They used these things they call folders.
Yeah.
And then they got confused and they sent this note out.
Well, and I think that might be the best, rather than speculate about that they were.
Well, I'm speculating too.
No, I'm not. You not yeah. talking about you speculating. Counsel speculates that the jury had difficulties with the officer's credibility. I think it's more likely that there was some confusion that, wait, we have two different numbers here. What does that mean? And then the question was, is the numbering system the same? And the evidence was clear that they're not. And whether those photos should have been the folders with the photos should also have been introduced into evidence. Perhaps, in hindsight, they should have been, or could have been at least. But there really was no, there was really no dispute as to what was in those photos or in those folders, or even how they were presented. The dispute was more whether the officer followed best practices by, not having the victim sign the back of the photo that she picked out, and whether this was a blind display of photos, it was more a debate about best practices as opposed to which number was in the.
Arguing at trial, where are these folders? Where are they? Why aren't they introduced into evidence?
Because it really wasn't an issue. No one disputed what was in those folders, or even how they were displayed to her.
So your point is that the defendant could have done that. He just chose. He and his counsel didn't do that.
No, in fact, his counsel clearly said when the judge brought this up, I just want to let you know I answered the jury question. I probably should have had you here, but I didn't. And the counsel said, "Well, I know that those numbers are never the same," and. If the testimony was clear that the number in the six-pack was Mr. Jewell was number two, and in the eight-folder array shown to the victim, she circled number three, which was also Mr. Jewell. And so, that gets back to this really was an undisputed point of fact that was really tangential to the accuracy of the identification. And whether she had the opportunity to observe him, what the lighting conditions were, that sort of thing, how startled she was, those kinds of issues that were raised at trial. It's how do you answer that question? And I think in hindsight, and I just, I'm not a judge and would never be one, but if I were a judge, I think 99% of the time when I get a question like that, I'd say just rely on your collective memory. But the fact is the judge answered the way he did.
That's why the Wisconsin Court of Appeals, I don't think, hesitated to see an error here. Yeah. And then they went on to conduct harmless error analysis. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, under ADPA, of course, the question is, in concluding that it was harmless error, was that reasonable? And I think that it because of not only the strength of the state's case, but I think the district court correctly pointed to the fact and relied more heavily on the fact that this was really an undisputed point of fact that the judge clarified. I mean, it's to use the phrase directed verdict, I think, is incorrect because that assumes a dispute. And defense counsel made it clear that she didn't dispute this. She just said, I would have preferred that you had told them to rely on their collective memory. But I know that these are never the same, and the judge concurred. Based on my 40 years of experience, these are never the same. Now, I think counsel points out in the brief that that's not necessarily correct. There's a remote possibility that if you shuffle them, you might end up with number two in both of them. And that's possible. I mean, you have, but that's not what happened here. And that testimony was clear that that's not what happened here. That he was number two in the six pack. Then it got shuffled by the other officer. And then the eight folders were handed to Officer Emanuelson, who did not know where Mr. Jewell's shuffled folder ended up. And it turns out it ended up at number three. And there was no dispute, it was no argument at trial by defense counsel that this numbering system is off, they were wrong, he should have been number two in the eight photo array if that's to be, no, there was no issue as to that. Again, the challenges to the identification were on other points such as ability to observe, lighting, that sort of thing. And
Can I confirm, I think what's embedded in your statement, there was no argument that where are the missing folders? No. And the reason the folders aren't in here is because it's possible they were manipulated, that there was a little, you know, blue dot in the corner of the one. Are these folders? If this identification is reliable, the state should come in with the folders. There's no argument like that.
But the jury didn't ask for the folders.
No. Forget the jury. Was defense counsel making those arguments?
Oh, I'm sorry.
No, there was no cross examination or in closing.
No, and that wasn't even made post conviction when he raised this issue. The argument basically, in fact, the primary argument is I should have been there, and he argued. Mr. Jewell argued in the district court, and I think I can quote it here that he should have been present because he could have participated in an argument and possibly offered an objection. That's a direct quote from this district court brief. But what would the objection should have been? Judge, the objection, I think, would have been, as defense counsel stated at the time, Judge, I would have preferred that you told them to rely on their collective memory. And as I argue in our brief, that if they followed that instruction and relied on their collective memory would have taken them back to the officer's testimony where it was clear that in the six-pack he was number two and in the photo array he was number three.
Yeah, I think the argument that I think the emphasis on the right to be present is only half of it. I think the argument you would have made is, Judge, you can't answer the question for them. My guy doesn't have much to work with here. This is a strong case.
Yeah.
And so if you answer that question no, they're gonna instantly return a guilty verdict. You gotta let them sort through the evidence and make credibility findings. And if they need evidence brought into the room, send it into the room. But they have to determine this collectively. That's what the lawyer would have done.
That's what they could have done, but the lawyer didn't do that.
In fact, well, no, because the judge answered the question. That's the whole point of the error.
No, but at that time, the lawyer could have still moved for a mistrial based on that answer had the lawyer felt that this was such an egregious error, but the lawyer understood that this is really an undisputed point of fact.
Yeah,
I see my red light is on, unless there are any more questions.
No, we understand your submission. Thank you very much, you. Mr. O'Brien. Appreciate it. Ms. Montgomery.
Thank you. Your Honor, there's 2 points. Going back to Judge Kirsch's question earlier about whether or not it mattered that it was disputed, there's no requirement for defense counsel to put on a defense. It's the state's burden during trial to prove its case, and to the extent there was any type of jury confusion, it was improper for the judge to step in and fix that jury confusion for the state and for the benefit of the state. If the jury was told to rely on their collective memory, the state seems to emphasize that they would have had the same decision. We don't know that for sure, right? Because it mattered to one or more jurors, and one of them, all you needed was one juror to make, to end up in a hung jury. So for those reasons, I think I asked the court to like rely on our briefs and to really focus on the impact of the judge's ex parte communication on the jury's verdict. Thank you.
You're quite welcome. Ms. Montgomery, thanks to you. You and your firm took this case on appointment, correct? We very much appreciate your service to your client, your service to the court, the quality of your submissions and your argument. Mr. O'Brien, thanks as always to you and the state, and we'll take the appeal under advisement.